hardened wall of air. Chuffing out a low laugh, he crosses his arms and shakes his head, his eyes volcanic.
This is war, Prisoner 73.
Oh, I certainly hope so. I smile, sinking my fingers into my hot, clenching core, looking at him from beneath lusty lids. I moan, soft and sensual, imagining they're his fingers now slicked in the residue of my wanton need, stroking me with deft, confident thrusts. A rumble boils in his chest.
Does that feel good?
Mm-hmm. I tuck my bottom lip between my teeth, working myself deeper, deeper. Pulling my fingers out, I paint slick circles around my swollen clit, bowing my spine so I can look down at myself, watch myself. I thrum that tender nub of nerves, releasing short, guttural groans. Sweat prickles the back of my neck, my hips rocking, chasing the warm, thrumming pleasure, clenching nothing, wanting him. I peek up, my smile sharpening at the severe outline of his swollen cock that makes me throb with a fiercer ache, at the vein popping in his temple, the tendons in his neck stretched as he watches me with feral precision. Why the long face?
Any lost opportunity to worship you is a tragedy.
Well, another slick swirl, another languid dip that stokes me full of clamping pleasure. What would you do if I let you pass?
Kneel between your legs and stuff my face between your thighs.
He growls instantly, as if the words were already poised behind his pinched lips.
Eat you until your hips are jerking and you're clenching around my tongue.
I picture it. Ache for it. Another teasing swirl around that tender nub of nerves, my hips tiding toward him with each jerking thrust, my entire body heating. I quicken the strum, legs widening, mind muddying. Then what? I plead, every cell in my body charged, verging on the precipice.
I'd flip you, slip a pillow beneath your hips so your ass is in the air, fill you with my fingers while my thumb threatens to push into you from behind.
My shoulder shifts up and down as I work myself to the illusion.
Once you're so wound up, your entire body's shuddering. I'd spread you, marvel you, then split you like an egg.
I snap, chin tucking close to my chest, every muscle in my center pulsing with violent waves of rapture, my harsh moans tackling him from afar. I ride my fingers with deep, desperate thrusts, every muscle tight and tenuous, then turning loose and long as the pleasure begins to ebb. A laugh bubbles up my throat, and I shake my head, looking at him from beneath a single raised brow, hand threading up to sweep my hair back off my face. That was good, I say, spreading myself so he can see the residue of my release. His eyes are black, jaw gritted, veins embossed all over his bulging muscles. He's never looked so big, so severe, so heart-achingly beautiful. Too bad he's in love with a death wish. He swallows, eyes on my core.
You're not done, Moonbeam. You're ripe.
Chuffing, I plant both feet on the ground, the hem of my shift slipping into place around my thighs. I whisper a softening word to Claude, then stand, collect my bowl of fruit, and toss a berry into my mouth. Sweet nectar bursts across my tongue. There are no more white flags with me, my king. I sway toward him, stepping into his smoldering atmosphere. They're all used up. I reach him, planting my hand on his chest, his tense muscles twitching beneath my touch as I sully him with my scent.
Good to know,
he grinds out, every bit a shadow-bathed beast in his prime.
I'll burn mine, shall I?
Please do. I toss another berry in my mouth and flash him a smile. Thanks for the fruit. It's really, really good. I leave the room without looking back. Diary entry. Elowen Nevon, age 20 phases, 5,041 phases after stone. King Osturn waved his sons and daughter off this aurora rise. We both watched them disappear into the distance before two of his guards snapped iron cuffs around my wrists. I was shoved into a bland room, forced into a chair. The king crouched before me, looking like he wanted to slaughter me. He told me my behavior was unbecoming of a future queen, that he'd seen the way Khan watched me, acted around me, that he knew we were fucking. He told me Khan is not fit to rule a kingdom because he can only wield two elemental songs, that he is not and never will be worthy of a crown. I spat in his face, told him I'd choose my own king or I would not bind at all, that I would give myself to the creators. He sucked all the air from my lungs and made me feel like my ribs were caving, then told me that he'd noticed how friendly I am with Vea, that if I didn't bind with Tyroth, he'd rid the world of the little bitch who took his bound, that he'd inform the twins of Khan's transgressions, and the three of them would hunt him down, then saw off his head, that he wouldn't stand a chance. I'd never felt fear so real. He said that if I left the next rise to prepare for the binding ceremony, he'd offer Slaatra safe passage back to Erythia. Alternatively, he'd leave her hutch unguarded as I'm dragged across the plains, and I'd be forced to watch her kill herself trying to follow me home. Then he got real close and looked at me like he could see straight through my skull. Told me he'd been informed that my bleeding is late, something I hadn't considered until that very moment. Hadn't even realized. He said this is the only way my youngling will have a chance at life. That if Tyroth believes he sired this small seed, apparently growing in my belly, all will be well. Otherwise, there will be nowhere Khan and I can hide where they won't find us. They'll hunt us down for this filthy dishonor we've bestowed upon our families. I've decided this is the trade-off for finding such a great love like Ma and Pa's, that mine, too, must end in tragedy, bearing the curse of my family name. Rave. Chapter 82. More fire smudges across my abdomen, an incinerating trail that seeps through my flesh, muscle, and bone, filling my lungs with the acrid smell of burning meat. I jolt against the cold stone bench, muscles spasming, shackles biting. Another scream threatens to burst past my gritted teeth, but I refuse to release it, shaking my head again and again while he paints me in bubbled, blistering welts.
I know it hurts.
The orange flame tethered to the tip of the Scavenger King's finger glints off his sooty eyes.
But pain hardens you, Firelock. It makes you so exhilarating to watch in the pits, and my coffers love it.
He moves about me in a flutter of frayed fabric, the outline of his bony crown jutting from his head like mangled fingers.
Just remember, you wouldn't be so marvelous without this, without me.
I've heard the same words more times than I know the numbers to count. But what makes him so special that he gets to make me hurt, but I don't get to do the same to him? Fallon's been teaching me many things, big words and big world things that are hard to grapple. And the more I learn, the less this makes sense. The more I want to get my hands around his neck and make it crack. I think I'd like that. Then Fallon and I could escape. She could finally show me the moons, the real ones, not the ones we draw on our ceiling. She could also show me the colorful clouds she's always talking about. The scavenger king whispers his flame into a ball he spreads down my leg, searing me all the way to the tips of my toes. My muscles spasm as I chew on a scream, gaze speared through the cleft in the ceiling to where his beast peers down from the shadows, always watching, always rumbling. I picture my pain pouring into that same cleft, disappearing, draining away before it gets a chance to take root as I hum a tune in my head. A slow, peaceful song that's been with me since the start.
Sometime soon, I'll wear my bronze crown and you won't ever have to hurt again. I'll be on my rightful throne and you'll be by my side, enjoying the spoils of your battles.
More fire is smeared down my shin, and I become deadly certain of one thing. I don't want to sit by his side. Not now. Not ever.
Look at me,
he growls, gripping my jaw and turning my head. I stare into ebony eyes, the scorch of pain making it hard to focus, my gaze sharpening, smudging, sharpening again. He'll have to stop soon. I'm about to pass out. His brows bunch together while he studies me, his hand smelling like smoke and burnt skin.
Why don't you ever speak? I know that little bitch I shoved in your cell is teaching you. Perhaps I should burn her, too? Give you something to scream about?
Touch her, and I'll tear you down the middle, then flip you inside out. I rasp, my words cold and stony. Raw. His eyes widen before a low chuckle rattles his chest, growing in strength until his head tips back. Deep, roaring laughter echoes off the walls.
There she is,
he says, snapping his stare to me as I realize my mistake, my heart stilling when I catch the cruel glint in his eye. He summons another ball of flame he spreads down my thigh. A slow, sizzling smear that burns through layers of muscle the flesh thread will struggle to heal before I'm due back in the pit. But that's not the reason another scream threatens to bludgeon up my throat. Not even close.
My fire lark does have a voice,
he purrs, summoning another flame into his hand. Another promise of pain that pales in comparison to the fear now flaying me.
I just needed the right motivation.
Rave. Rave. Rave.
Rave.
My eyes pop open, my chest packed full of a scream I refuse to release. I hiss air through bared teeth, filling my lungs with breaths that do nothing to unstick me from the scalding slumber terror still slicked across my skin, the smell of smoke and fried flesh thick in the back of my throat. My vision sharpens on a pair of hard, cinder eyes shadowed by thick black lashes, a dent of concern etched between Khan's brows that jolts something inside me, makes me want to squirm. I shove at his naked chest, trying to get him to unstraddle me. When he doesn't so much as budge, I shove again, this time releasing all my pent-up energy into one volcanic word. Move! Finally easing sideways, he gives me room to roll off the pallet and stand, face tipped to the skyhole, fingers threading through my sweat-slicked hair and shoving it off my face. Just a dream. It was just a dream.
What's a firelark, Rave?
Fuck. I charge for the doorway, halfway down the stairs, when his thickly accented voice attacks me from behind.
What's a fucking firelark?
None of your damn business, I snip, powering toward the exit, needing to submerge myself and scrub this feeling from my skin. Khan's heavy steps chase me through the jungle as I stalk toward the loft, wind whipping my hair into lashing tendrils of black. I explode free of the jungle and leap onto the shore, the sky blotted with dark clouds, thick blades of sun striking through. In another few strides, I'm waist deep in the water and kicking my feet out from under me, dropping below the surface. I scrub my face, my arms, my legs, and for the first time ever, I let loose the firestorm scream that chars a path up my throat in a spill of bubbles racing for the surface. Firm hands grip my arms and lug me skyward. I'm spun, jerked into Khan's roiling atmosphere, his face a sculpted clash of ruin and rage, mouth thin. Waves slosh against my back while he holds me captive.
Who were you talking to, Rafe?
We're not having this conversation, I grit out past the ribbons of sodden hair plastered to my face, trying to rip free of his firm grip. He pulls me so close I can scarcely breathe without crushing my breasts against his firm, heaving chest as he looks down upon me, his molten stare burning into me.
You seem to be under the illusion that I'm going to drop every bone you accidentally toss my way simply because you commanded. But that was before I watched your entire body knot like you were being fucking tortured in your dream.
He growls with enough fortitude to dissolve my next breath.
Now, my beautiful, spectacular, indignant moonbeam, let's try this again. Who were you talking?
A pained, ear-splitting screech rattles the atmosphere. Both our heads whip to the south, toward fluttered movement emerging from the belly of a low cloud clinging to the mountain's rounded head. Horns blow, 10 short, sharp bursts that pinch the air. I frown. What's that mean? 2 large, vibrant molten maws plunge through the cloud, both trailing white flags from the tips of their plumed tails, their riders donning silver armor to match their gray saddles. My heart chills. Shade emissaries? Khan remains still, silent. Another chest-cracking scream cleaves the sky, followed by a deep honking sound that rattles me to the core. A pearly moon plume dives through the heavy tuft of cloud, the white flag tethered to its ankle fluttering in the wind, its shredded wings scrambling to catch air and keep the creature from wobbling around. Volcanic rage boils my blood as the beast churns, its head whipping around. It cranks its maw wide and leaks another screeching whine. My gaze homes in on its beautiful, lustrous flesh, riddled with blistered welts. Everything inside me goes eerily quiet, my lungs compacting, a wedge of hurt I didn't realize was tucked in my chest, splitting wider, wider. The beast plummets toward the city hutch, and my stomach drops when I catch sight of the saddle bound around its hide, of the blonde rider pressed flat against the poor dragon's back. Rick Zoros. Khan threads his hand behind my head and forces my face into his wet chest, breaking my view of the tortured moon plume, like he wants to protect me from the horrid sight. But it's already branded in my brain like a blistered boil that's bulging, bulging, destined to pop. Another pained screech, and Khan curses beneath his breath, every cell in my body now blitzed with a slicing rage. My vision tunnels, mind numbs, a vengeful serpent slithering through my chest, weaving around my ribs, charming my stony heart into a slow, steady beat. The promise of revenge tickles the tips of my fingers. I'm going to peel the skin from his body, pierce his eyes, rip out his teeth, one by one, rip off his nails just as leisurely. He's fucking dead. I shove away from Khan and storm from the water, the world around me smudging into oblivion. I barely feel the underbrush crunching beneath my bare feet, barely feel the cool stone steps as I charge toward our sleep suite, the distant drone of something bellowing behind me barely banging against my conscience. All that exists is my dense, pulsing lust for Rex's blood on my hands. All that matters is how exactly this is going to pan out. Like sitting down to a 10-course meal, each plate boasting multiple ingredients, all beautifully presented. I grab my sheer sun protection robe, shoving my arms down the sleeves and threading the belt around my middle. Flipping the palette, I reveal the cache of weapons I purchased from the Curly Quill. I saddle myself with the bandolier and both sheaths, snatching at the perfect line of blades I'd meticulously stashed, imagining the way each sharp tip is going to bite into Rex's flesh. My hands are swift as a lightning strike as I pack my sheaths full, blade after blade, picturing them stabbing through Rex's jaw, into his ear, flaying him from chin to navel. He's a filthy shit stain on this world, and I will exterminate him. Slowly. Painfully. I stuff my feet into my boots, lace them tight, tucking blades down the sides before I spin, making for the door. The ground shakes, the only warning I get before a chunk of stone falls before the exit, stalling my escape, the room filling with a blow of wind tunneling in from outside. Frowning, my gaze climbs skyward to where a jagged hole in the ceiling spills a thick shaft of sunlight all over my recently refurbished, upturned palette. Again, I look at the chunk of fallen stone, the beautiful, elaborate images carved into it now cracked through, smaller bits of it scattered across the ground. My attention stabs to where Khan is standing by the end of the palette, arms crossed as he watches me through shadowed eyes. You broke my wall.
Our wall, he grinds out. And I had to get your attention somehow.
His gaze drops down to my chest and thighs, up again.
What are you doing?
I look down at myself, appearing almost feathered with the amount of blades I've packed upon my body, most of which I barely remember wielding. Hunting, I say, lifting my eyes, meeting his sooty stare. Anybody who treats an animal that way deserves to be flayed, without remorse. Now move the stone. There's a brief pause before I remember my manners. Please. I could try to move it myself, but chances are I'll just create more of a mess. I have no interest in making a fool of myself before the Burn King, who can famously build or crush cities with a few well-crafted words. No thank you. Too much finger-itching silence slips by before Khan says,
He's toting a white flag, Moonbeam.
I can fix that. I whip a blade from my bandolier, flicking it between my fingers. I'll use it to mop up his blood when I'm done. It'll be red by the time I'm through. Red like Essie's hair. Red like the color of his beast's fleshy welts. Red like the blood he lashed from my body. Khan watches me with feline precision, like he's assessing a battlefield, trying to work out the best angle of attack.
There will be war with whomever his patron is if that rider ends up dead on my doorstep.
My heart rallies into a wild, rib-crunching churn, my upper lip peeling back from my canines. Anyone who hires that monster deserves to die, too. Just as slowly. Just as painfully.
I agree. But this is not the day for it. He's traveling with two Shade emissaries who've not shown the same cruelty toward their Molten Maws. Are you going to kill them, too?
He asks, tipping his head to the side.
Because if you don't, word will get back that an emissary was killed on Burn soil. A perfect excuse for my brothers to shred across the Boltanic Plains and batter me with a war they've been so looking forward to since I murdered our pa.
I open my mouth, close it, then crunch my hands into fists so tight the hilt of my iron dagger bites into my palm. So what do you want me to do? His eyes soften the slightest amount while I imagine mine do the opposite.
Much as I loathe to say this,
he rumbles, too slow, too assuaging.
I need you to put your blades down. I will leave now and speak with the riders. Find out what they want.
I grind my back molars, tasting blood, the ravenous energy churning beneath my skin, threatening to split me at the seams. You're not going to kill him? If he takes this kill from me, I will be so intolerable he'll have to cut me from this world.
No,
he says, his voice remorseful.
I'm sorry.
Promise you won't? The faintest line forms between his brows.
I promise I will not kill the male. You have my word.
Good. Nodding, I stuff my dagger back into my sheath, the boiling bloodlust strumming through my veins, dropping to a low simmer. I know where he is. I can hunt him the moment he leaves. The soothing knowledge eases the itch at the tips of my fingers, if only a little. Spinning, I begin unsheathing my daggers, lining them up on the pallet's stone base again. I slip my arms free of my bandolier, then unbuckle my sheaths.
Can I trust you to stay here, Rafe?
I look over my shoulder at Khan, still standing in the same place, still watching me with cutthroat precision. I'm not going to slay him on your soil, Khan. Now that I understand, I will not put your folk in danger. I promise.
That doesn't answer my question.
It doesn't. I turn, arms crossed as we lock eyes, stances matching, a thrum of tension pounding between us that's almost palpable enough to shake the ground. Twice he opens his mouth to speak, then snaps his teeth shut. Finally, he clicks his tongue, snatches his great flirt tunic off the ground, grabs his crown, and releases a dense command that shifts the beautiful, broken piece of stone to the side. Without another word or glance in my direction, he leaves.
Khan. Chapter 83. Shadowed by six armed guards, I charge through erratic beams of sunlight, shafting into the stronghold's corridor. A stony silence hanging over the lot of us. Hutch 27? Yes, sire. The other emissaries settled on Platform 12. They've already dismounted and are under beaded guard until you're ready to accept them. But the moon plume just fell into the first patch of shade she could find rather than listen to the keepers. Yeah, well, I don't blame her, I mutter as we round a corner, almost bowling over two soldiers who flatten their backs against the wall and pump their fists to their chests. Ach, Atenda! And did anyone get the name of the Moonplume's rider? I ask. Rek Zaros, sire. My gaze whips to Brun on my left, his flinty eyes flicking to me. A bounty hunter. He's well known in the Southern Kingdoms. Oh, I've heard of him. Pretty sure Rafe bit the tip of his finger off. Now I wish she'd been able to tear out his throat while she was at it. Based on her reaction to seeing him, I'd say she's feeling somewhat similar. Anyone have iron cuffs? Me, Colette says from my right. Good. Another screeching roar belts through the stronghold, splintering my self-control. I grind my teeth, quickening my pace, storming up a flight of stairs. The two guards bracketing the doors at the top rip them wide the moment they catch sight of us, exposing the flat stretch of chapped stone large enough for almost any beast to land, the odd coppery bush growing from the cracks. One of the earliest hutches, somewhat isolated, distanced from the rest of them. Rarely used. I look out upon the massive kidney-shaped landing patch forged in an otherwise sheer drop of cliff, the hutch's mouth drenched in a pour of sunlight on the eastern side, the other half is steeped in shadow currently occupied by Rek's trembling moon plume, pawing at the stone, coiling away from the sunlight with Rek still saddled. I'm not surprised she's distressed. Frightened. With the storm clouds dissipating rapidly, there's a dense, humid heat this creature's not built to withstand, and no hope of the sunshine letting up to allow her a painless crossing to the hutch's shadowed entrance on the other side. Creators, I mutter, taking the creature in. A black mask is fitted to her face, shielding her eyes and protecting her from blinding. Not that it helped the rest of her. Her leathery skin is bubbled, blistered all over, blood and pus leaching from her mottling of sun exposure wounds, smearing across the stone as she binds herself into a tighter ball. A shape that reminds me too much of Slatra, solidified in the same position deep beneath my sleep suite. My heart pounds as I scour her shredded wings that look barely capable of catching air, and I wonder how she made it here at all. Hutchkeepers inch toward the broken beast, yelling commands for her to pull from the shadows and move into the hutch. Her silky tail sweeps across the ground, threatening to flick them off the cliff, some leaping out of the way just in time to dodge their plummeting fate.
Piu de Vibantan, defonda,
Rek bellows to Boulder, a groundbreaking timber that clefts a web of hairline cracks through the stone directly beneath his beast. Attempting to force the poor creature from the small patch of shade. Rather than scurry from the unsteady ground, the tormented moon plume tucks into an even tighter ball, almost crushing Rek against the cliff at her back in her squealing efforts to avoid the sun. Scowling, Rek mashes the thorned heels of his boots through gory holes in his saddle blanket.
Move, you stupid bitch!
The moon plume tips her head, releasing another deep, droning lament that shreds my fucking heartstrings. Wait here, I growl at my entourage, stalking forward. A hefty thud-ump pounds the air, an immense, more predatory form of rage swelling beneath my ribs, falling amidst the churning pool of my own violent wrath. Maintaining a healthy distance from the sweeping reach of the moon plume's tattered tail, I signal for the keepers to clear out, stopping in Rek's line of vision, arms crossed, so I can hide the clenching of my fists. He meets my gaze, opens his mouth to speak again, the tendons in his neck stretching with the strain required to shape Boulder's language.
Do it. Put another crack in my ground.
I'll enjoy filling it with your grated remains. He snaps his teeth together, the corner of his mouth curling. He releases a slow, blood-curdling laugh that snips off the moment Rygon explodes into sight. Massive, billowy wings wrap around the air as he hovers before the landing patch, oozing bone-crushing strength, every part of his body a heaving mass of motion but for his heavily thorned head. Plumes of smoke spill from his flared nostrils, blazing eyes narrowed on Rek. Now statue still, his moon plume so small and delicate compared to my hulking saber scythe.
So broken and bound.
She releases another pained lament. This one softer.
More scratchy.
A deep rumble emits from Rygon's chest, his lips peeling back, flames flickering between the gaps of his bared teeth. His desire to plunge forward and rip Rek off that saddle folds through our bond, making every muscle in my body feel like it's at war with itself.
Order your beast to stand down,
Rek bellows, throwing me a panicked stare I take far too much delight in, tasting smoke on the back of my tongue coupled with the sweet nectar of his fear.
Unwedge your spokes from that moon plume's hide. Get down from your saddle, and I'll consider it.
Imperial cunt, he mutters beneath his breath, probably thinking I can't hear him, like a youngling tossing a tantrum for being told what to do. His words are dust in my boots, but his actions are fucking stones. Again, my gaze drops to those bloody gouges in his moon plume's hide.
As his Imperial Highness commands, Rek says,
then throws his leg over and scales the short length of rope, black whip coiled at his hip, his stare caught on my hovering beast as he leaps down and charges toward me. In an impressive surge of strength, the moon plume spears her head forward, snapping just shy of Rek's heels. With a hiss of sharp words, he leaps out of the way, reaching for his whip.
Lash that dragon, and I'll tie you to a stake and whip you to ribbons, I scold.
His hand pauses around the handle.
That's two threats and not a single formal greeting. I'm toting a white flag, sire.
I'm tempted to shove it up his ass, then deliver him to a rave. But kingdom, rules, well aware, but we don't condone animal cruelty in this kingdom. You've severed your bond with the beast. That's on you.
I'll just have to lash it back into her later.
He seethes beneath his breath, cutting another glance over his shoulder at the bundled creature.
Like he thinks I'll let that happen.
Order your handlers back out here to move Leary into the hutch so she can drink and feast,
Rec commands, an imperial lilt to his tone that makes my brows lift.
I'll also require the services of your flesh thread to patch up her wings.
My stare drifts to the luminous beast, bubbled and blistered, head tucked beneath her frayed wing, looking moments away from solidifying right here on the landing patch.
Rygon continues to leer at Rec,
smoke still pluming from his flared nostrils, an immense pulsating plea pounding from his chest to mine. One word and he'll lunge forward and snatch the male, crunch him into a bloody mulch. My self-restraint has never had such excruciating exercise. I'll have refreshments wheeled to her until I can have a blue bead brought up who's strong enough to shift a cloud. I grit out as he unrolls a leather pouch, revealing a line of smoke sticks. I'll also call for the flesh thread. Unfortunately, she attended celebrations for the great Flirt in a neighboring village. It'll take her some time to get here.
Not true. Bea's away, but Agni's here.
I'll be sending someone to wake her the moment I leave this landing patch, but he doesn't need to know that. By the way, that moonplume's curling into herself. I doubt she has time to wait, but we'll do what we can for her. Make her comfortable. Rec sniffs, passing me a glance from beneath pale brows as he plucks a smoke stick from his crammed collection and tucks it between his lips.
Well, that's fucking useless to me, isn't it?
He murmurs, keeping his lips pinched on the tight-packed roll of parchment. I don't answer.
So what am I supposed to do?
He asks, throwing his hands wide, as if it's my fault he's in this predicament. When it's time to leave, I can organize you a carter back to the Fade, I grind out. You can try your luck in Boggeth for a beast more suitable to your needs.
Fine, he sneers,
cutting a glance over his shoulder at the poor, trembling creature, who goes eerily still, lifts a leathery lip, and growls at him.
She's your burden now. She's a stupid feral bitch who's more trouble than she's worth. My advice? She'd be better off chunked up and dumped in your feeding troughs.
Your advice is worth less to me than a smear of coke shit on my boot, I say, voice monotone. Huffing out a laugh, Rec cocks his head to the side, his long, sharp features severe against the burnt terrain. Looking at me from beneath an arched brow, he tucks the leather satchel back into his pocket and retrieves a weld, using a bulb of flame to singe the end of his stick. He pulls a deep puff before blowing a plume of smoke that tangles around his face.
You gonna call off your beast? Or will I go down in history as the male who stoked the war between the Shade and the Burn?
Tyroth is his patron, then. Interesting.
Hach Tenai, Rygon.
My dragon shakes his head, displeasure rippling through our bond like a flow of lava. He snaps at the air before he roars, thrashing his wings with such force, a burst of wind barrels into the landing patch, tilling dirt and smoke.
He cuts off in a wide arcing path, leering at Rek as he powers through the sky, releases another screeching roar, then tucks his wings and plummets out of sight. Rek brings the stick to his lips, draws on it, then blows a plume of smoke in my direction.
This is cozy.
My eyes narrow. You have some gall bringing a moon plume to my kingdom without a blue bead in tow. The tone of my voice says everything my words do not. If his beast wasn't shackled with that tattered white flag, I'd hammer him to a wooden pole on the esplanade, let the sun bubble and blister his skin until it's falling from his bones. Then I'd cut Rave loose, sit myself center stage, and watch her have her bloody way with whatever's left of the fuck, before carving his head free and tossing it to Rygon as a snack. He shrugs.
Leary's not large enough to carry two riders, and with the great flirt looming, most of Gore's flock had been turned out,
he says, past a slashing smile, dragging on his smoke stick again. In other words, he didn't have the patience to wait, to put his beast's well-being before his own selfish whims, expecting us to patch up the mess when he arrived. My muscles bulge and swell, tendons stretching as I battle the will to lunge forward and rip his head from his shoulders. Promises and wars be damned. Another suck of his smoke stick, and I notice his other hand is gloved. I jerk my chin at it. So it's true.
What is?
A member of the Arth bit off the tip of your finger.
She did. I'm yet to find a Rooney talented enough to undo the damage.
He pulls off his glove to boast the gory nub, inspecting it from all angles. She, too, was a feral bitch. My hands fist so tight my knuckles pop.
I heard your beast was in the vicinity at the time of her execution, that he shoved a couple of molten maws out of the way to snatch her off the stake.
He looks at me through slit eyes, a look that chills me to the marrow. My gut sours with the thought that this fuck has even the smallest inkling of what went down in that Colosseum. He was turned out. Can't fault the beast for liking the taste of Fae, I lie, cutting him a threatening grin.
Ah.
Tell me, Rek Zaros, why have you soiled my ground with your presence?
I'm hunting someone.
Head cocked to the side, he pulls on his stick again.
The princess went missing just after her anointing.
Her pa sent me to track her down. I almost laugh.
Of course he did.
Everybody knows this male has hung off Kazari like a sticky shadow for many phases, desperate to vie for her affections. Only Tyroth would use that to his advantage in the urge to find his precious daughter, who won't stop slipping free of the cage he's kept her in for far too long. Well, I mutter, looking at him down the line of my nose. Find comfort in the fact that if she were my daughter, I'd do anything in my power to keep her well the fuck away from you. He makes a chuffing sound, pulling another sizzling draw before he taps a wad of ash away.
I tire of your words. How about you take a stroll into your chambers and wash whatever whore you're wearing off your cock while I scour the city,
I consider the implications of popping a single eyeball. I could probably get around it politically. But Rave's another story. I think she'd be disappointed in me. And that's the last thing I want. Look all you want. You won't find Kazari here, and you won't scour my city without wearing iron cuffs, escorted by a barrage of beaded chaperones, I say, gesturing to my guards lined up at the entrance to the Imperial stronghold, each of them boasting red, clear, or brown beads in their beards or hair. I, too, will escort you. I'm sure you understand.
Of course,
he grits out, flicking his stub on the ground. The embers hissing like a dying serpent before I crush it beneath my heel.
And my saddlebags?
Will be removed and brought to your temporary quarters, where you'll be under full surveillance every second you sully my kingdom with your putrid presence. He extends his hands, a sadistic smile curling his lips as Colette approaches with the cuffs and latches them onto his wrists, locking them in place.
Is this an honor you bestow upon all who visit your stronghold?
I return his smile, exposing the full length of my canines. Only the ones I fucking loathe.
Rave. Chapter 84. I pace sweeping semicircles around the pallet, clenching my hands into fisted balls, releasing them, clenching them again. Energy lashes at the underside of my skin like a metal-tipped whip, slicing through my resolve with every powered stride. I crack my neck from side to side, scrub my face, rip my hands through my hair. White flag, white flag, white fucking flag. Another pained yowl slits across my heart, tangling with a flash. A vision strikes like a blow to the brain. Pale, blistered skin, shredded wings, milky, unseeing eyes. A deep groan bludgeons up my throat. I'm in the jungle before I can even process this stabbing pierce of my thoughts, leaping over the stone wall before I register the suffocating noose bound around my throat, charging up the esplanade when I become vitally aware of the heaviness sitting upon my chest, crushing my ribs. The city is sleeping, leading me to ponder the hour as I charge up a path winding between terracotta homes draped in bronze vines, their inky blooms bobbing in the wind, facing shafts of sun that paint my back. Rygun shreds through the air above, carving large loops that keep churning back to the faraway ledge I saw the wounded moon plume plummet toward. I've never seen him act this way before. The ground becomes more uneven beneath my boots as I weave to a higher altitude, pulling tight breaths of muggy, sweet-smelling air, making for the sheer cliff ahead. A dead end. I unlace my boots, tuck them behind a bush pressed close to one of the bouldered homes, then rest my hands on the stone, looking up the vertical expanse. Rygun makes another swooping pass of the isolated landing patch far above, almost like he's guarding it. Frowning, I wedge my fingers into the clefts, find a sturdy foothold, and pull myself up, ascending the cliff face in teeth-gritted increments. The wind tangles with my hair and toys with my trailing robe as I climb, moving with speed and agility, with poise and purpose. Another pained lament tapers into oblivion, tangling with another blinding flash. Me, aboard the back of a vibrant feathered beast gliding through the sky, an oppressive heat pressing down on me as screams rip my throat raw. A bloody, blistered moon plume bobbing through the air behind me, tethered to my wake, rays of golden light glinting off her big, glistening eyes that weren't fit to peer at the sun, that lost their sparkle, then faded into a dark gray. Light gray. Paler. The vision slits my chest straight down the middle, takes my heart in its hand, and crumbles it through a crushing fist. I slip, hands whipping up, catching myself on a tree root protruding from the cliff. Dangling, I fail to scrape the residue of the vision from my mind's eye, that noose around my throat tightening, tightening. All the light seems to wick from my surroundings, the vision's suffocating tendrils lashing my mind like blazing ribbons of searing sunlight. A massive roaring shadow swoops past me, gusting my face with a slap of air. I pull a shuddered gasp, my stare finally spearing past my swinging feet, honing in on the bouldered city far below. I blink away the blur, my heart lurching as I properly gauge the potential drop just waiting to yank me into its slaughtering void. Fuck. Again, Rygun swoops past, the thorned tip of his vast wings slicing the air so close to me I'm certain it's not an accident. Stop fussing! I scream in his direction, head tipping as I take in my tentative grip on the crumbling root, my next words mumbled. I'm fine. I reach forward with my flailing hand and wedge my fingers into the cliff, find a foothold, and transfer my weight back onto the stone, dumping the painful image on the shore of my icy lake where I can deal with it later, when I'm not scaling a cliff. I secure myself to the stone, then loosen my grip on the root and continue my ascent, threading my arm over the ledge when I reach the top. I slap my hand on the landing patch and pull myself up, stairs stabbing left toward the hutch's gloomy hollow. Heaving myself onto flat ground, I peer over my shoulder to see Rygun still circling through the sky behind me, watching on from a distance. Still fussing from a distance. Sighing, I creep toward the hutch, pausing by a black mesh mask big enough to fit a dragon, ripped through as though a talon tore it free. I crouch, running my fingers across the sheer fabric, not dissimilar to the roll of material Khan instructed me to veil my face with while on Rygun's back. A shiver crawls up my spine, something inside me shifting heavily. Paying attention, I pause. Turn. My blood ices at the sight of the coiled moon plume trembling in the lump of shadow over the other side of the landing patch, emitting a dull light. A frosty wail of mourning threatens to carve up my throat from somewhere deep beneath my ribs as I scour the dragon's leathery skin riddled with welts, shreds of sizzled flesh hanging off its haunches. The massive holes burnt through the elegant sweep of its shimmery wings. Through one of those tattered lacerations, a single glistening globe peers at me, snatching my breath and the frayed tips of my stubby heartstrings. That slit in my chest widens, a lump swelling in my throat that's hard to breathe past as I study the wounded creature, a quarter the size of Slatra's moon. As I take in the hole gouged into its saddle beneath the stirrups, the trail of blood weeping from deep, fleshy wounds. My knees threaten to give way, my fizzing, spitting rage yielding to ribbons of icy sadness that bind around my brittle ribs and chill me to the core. Somebody has wheeled a barrow of chunked up meat close to the dragon, not that it appears to have been touched. Same goes for the copper trough of water that's still filled to the brim, the surface rippling with each rumbled breath the creature releases. A crackling boom rips across the sky, and I draw on the sweet scent of impending rain, a single drip plummeting past my ear, splatting against the ground. The sky is crying for you. I have them too, I whisper, and the moon plume blinks. I swallow the swelling lump in my throat and study those welts, moving forward a step. Another. You can't see mine, I rasp, stepping over a web of hairline cracks in the ground. Not anymore. I release my truth like a charred skeleton dredged up from the shore of my icy lake, spat on the stone beside this beautiful, broken creature. I steal another step toward the trembling beast. Another. The pain, it never goes away, no matter how hard you pretend. My voice cracks on the last word, memories of my own burning flesh shoving up my nose, muddying my lungs, making my gut clench, the muscles beneath my tongue tingling with a surge of nausea. I used to believe the creators were punishing me for something. I move closer still. More drops of rain splashing upon my shoulders and weeping down my skin, recalling the memory that struck me on the cliff and almost tore me to my death. A jagged blade now wedged in my chest as I dip inside myself, lift the memory from the obsidian shore within, and put it where it's meant to be. in my chest, where I can feel it always, forever. I think that might be true. I sob past the pit in my throat, growing bigger with each tentative step toward the beast still staring at me, like she's taking me in, weighing my words, my actions. She sniffs at the air, perhaps pulling my scent into her lungs. I think I failed my moonplume slatra many phases ago, I admit with soul-crushing certainty, like finally chewing a splinter from my hand that was rooted deep, the flesh around it swollen, infected. The admission, it feels right. So heartbreakingly right. Another tear slips down my cheek as the sky continues to weep, as I draw close enough to the trembling beast to settle my hand on an untarnished patch of cold, leathery skin. A thump pulses through my spine, like somebody tore the cord of bones from my body, whipped it against the stone, then threaded it back through me. This brisk, flesh-biting cold, it feels like home. The creature blinks, a truth settling in my marrow, deep and yearning, vulnerable, a truth that's both frightening and abrupt. I think you and I were supposed to find one another, I whisper, peering into the moonplume's glimmering globes as another tear slips down my cheek, as a promise plunges between the calloused ridges of my heart like a thorn, straightening my spine, reinforcing my bones, my resolve. Like an icy sun just crested the horizon in my chest and filled my lungs with the first full breath I've pulled since I woke in this strange, foreign reality of pain. No one will ever hurt you again. Rave. Chapter 85. Barely any light threads through the mouth of the cave, the storm rattling the sky outside, howling against the din. Heavy clouds that blocked the sun long enough for three hutch keepers to help me coax the moon plume into the shadowy burrow. They told me her name is Leary, that she's just shy of adolescence, based on the length of the tendrils dangling from her jowls, but that she's very small for her age. She certainly looks it, curled up in the middle of the lofty cavern. A delicate loop of interlacing runes surrounds us, creating a chilled environment that makes every soft word I sing expel with a puff of milky air. My hand circles over the wide curve of Leary's nose, her flesh an icy nip against my palm that calms something inside me. She blows a cold, rumbling breath across my leg, lids threatening to sink shut over her gloomy eyes, and my gaze drifts between her and the Imperial Stronghold's flesh thread. This one will hurt, Agni says, her words muffled past the thick woven material bound around her head, keeping her warm. She's crouched beside one of Leary's half-stretched wings, sketching a preliminary path of runes around a gaping hole in the largest panel of membrane, doused in the glow emitting off Leary's hide. She flicks me a dubious look. It's a tender spot, and the tear is large. She nods. There's a lot of flesh to be remade with a single bind of runes, but I really didn't want to have to repeat the process more than once in this spot. So, we're going to try. I reach behind me for the hard, wiry tuft of gorsy grass, cracking some of the stems to release the sedative stench and resting it against my thigh, right before Leary's left nostril. Running my hand up between her eyes, I give Agni a tight nod. She dips the sharp tip of her etching stick in a jar, gaze nipping at Leary before she tucks her head and begins carving the runes. Leary's lids pry open to slits, her upper lip lifting from a row of piercing sabers as her eyes narrow on Agni. The long muscles in her lanky neck bulge, tendons tightening, as though she's deciding whether or not she wants to whip her head around and snap. Agni pauses, stare set on this snarling creature. Heist en avail de nil, Leery. I crack more fronds of gorsy grass, slicking my palms in the milky residue and rubbing it across her snout. Heisten of ale. Catkin de ne. Leary's muscles soften, and her upper lip stops wobbling, nostrils flaring. She blows a cold plume of breath on me, and I give the signal to continue. You know how to speak in the southern tongue? Agni asks, resuming her tedious task. Still rubbing my hand across Leary's snout, I look up. Not that I'm aware. She peers at me. That's what you spoke right now. My ma used to be an emissary. She had to be familiar with the language because some folk south of the wall choose only to speak in the southern tongue, especially in some of the communities south of Arithia. Huh. I hadn't considered the words that were coming out of my mouth. Simply spoke them. Did I speak it fluently? Agni nods, pausing to dip her etching stick in her tincture again, passing me a gentle smile. Like you've been speaking it for a long while. Have you spent much time in the shade? That you can remember? That you can remember. My thoughts sink down that coiled staircase beneath Khan's sleep suite, into a cavern pregnant with a luminous, icy tombstone, the weight of which I can suddenly feel beneath my ribs, weighing me down. I let the silence ruminate between us, cracking more gorsy grass upon my hands to smooth over Leary's nose. Agni clears her throat and continues etching her runes, her own lids appearing to grow just as heavy as her patient's. Hardly surprising, she's been working nonstop since she got here almost an entire Aurora cycle ago, during which neither of us have slept nor barely even eaten. The entire time, the storm has raged, clapping the sky into luminous shards, rumbling like a caged beast. Like rain is overflowing with teeth-gnashing anger, a similar storm churning within the confines of my chest cavity. But I'm mindful, uncharacteristically, painfully patient. A thumping boom rattles the cave, rattles the very air we breathe as Agni completes the misshapen loop. She lifts her hands, and we both still as the hole's tattered circumference illuminates, tightening, new flesh spawning. Please be enough, Agni mutters, etching stick poised as the hole shrinks in nail-biting increments. Please. It seals shut. Agni's face contorts, like something just stabbed her through the gut. Are you okay? Her eyes roll into the back of her head, and she slumps sideways, glass shattering with the heavy thump of her head hitting the ground. Fuck. I unravel myself and dart around Leary's crimping wing to where Agni is bunched in a shuddering heap. Agni? Shit. I crouch beside her, heaving her up against my chest. Her lids flutter open. I fainted, didn't I? Yes, I grind out, brushing my hand across the lump on her forehead. You need sleep. I need sleep, she mimics, allowing me to help her all the way to her feet. I'll escort you back to the stronghold. I'm fine, she assures, passing me a weak smile before she reaches up and touches the lump, wincing. This isn't the first time I've come to with an egg on my head. I consider telling her about the time I came to with the remnants of Rex's finger between my teeth to lighten the mood a smidge, but think better of it. Are you sure you're okay? She nods, her drab gaze dropping to her spread of tools and tinctures, some shattered, others scattered across the ground. She sighs. What a creator's damn mess. I'll sort it. You go rest. I kneel to collect the strewn vials, corking some, doing what I can to salvage the spilled contents. I'm terribly sorry I can't work any faster, Rafe. You're easing her discomfort at the cost of your own health and well-being. Don't be sorry. Go. Eat. Replenish. Get some rest. I'll still be here when you return. It's just... Frowning, I look up to see her stare scraping across my arms, my legs, tears welling in her eyes. Anyone who's been through the process knows how much it hurts, and I understand her suffering must be hard for you to endure. Her meaning sinks beneath my skin, whisking my pulse into a rapid churn. I clear my throat, carting a bundle of corked jars to the table we had set up on the far side of the cavern, my gaze caught on my task of putting them back into place. We don't need to talk about, to me, you shine far brighter than Leary. I sigh, set my hands on the table, and stare at the wall. In all my known life, I hadn't met a single folk blessed with dragonsight. Now, in less than 60 rises, I've met two. They're supposed to be blessedly rare. I don't want the king knowing, I say, turning to look at her. Veya said the same when I brought it up with her. Your secret's safe with me. And I have no desire to speak of it. None. I don't need coddling, Agni, though I appreciate the sentiment. All I need is for you to get some rest before you pass out again. Her mouth snips shut, cheeks flushing. Of course. With a dip of her head, she moves toward the cavern's mouth, stepping into the misty curtain of rain. Creators, I mutter, shaking my head. I make for Leary's head, her heavy-lidded gaze following my every motion, blinking with the flutter of wispy, pale lashes. Such a contrast to her dark, fathomless eyes. I settle before her, doused in the frosty blow of her soft, rumbling exhale. Rubbing my hand back and forth across her rounded nose, I marvel at the unique texture of her skin, like crumpled leather pressed smooth, veined in a web of fine creases. Her slit nostrils flare, and she wafts at me, the tasseled tendrils hanging from her jowls fluffing as my hand threads up between her eyes, rubbing. A trilling sound rattles in the back of her throat, and a smile kicks up the corner of my lips.
What is it you don't want me finding out, Rafe?
Though my heart lodges itself on a rib, I keep my features smooth, impassive. Heavy footsteps echo behind me, and every hair on the back of my neck lifts as I realize how close he is. His scent wafting around me like a soothing blanket, part of me is desperate to nuzzle into